Let's roll. This is Countercharge, your podcast for ranks, flanks, and kings of war. Join your hosts as they delve into the world of Panathar and bring you worldwide coverage of all things Kings of War.
Welcome to Countercharge. I'm Rob Duff.
I'm Jeremy Duvall.
And I'm Matt Croger. Welcome to our October monthly fireside chat. Boy, hasn't there been a bit happening. Not of all which we will address tonight, but as we record now our October chat, just a few hours ago, the Mantic video on Command Dice has dropped. Our episode that Rob and Jeremy did with Kyle on Command Dice has dropped. I'm waiting for the smoke signals to reach me in Australia of the world burning. We may not get to addressing Command Dice, but we'll have a bit more in the future if we don't tonight, because I think we had a couple of really tasty questions for you this month.
Controversial,
exactly. But before we get into that, let's roll into what we've been doing in terms of our community update. Jeremy, do you want to kick off first today?
By the time this comes out, we'll have just had Bay of Kings. Bay of Kings is scheduled for September 21st, 22nd. It's held in beautiful San Diego at a harbor. So there's nice meeting space with boats docked. Kyle Timberlake brings out his meat and prepares it for you. Delicious. He does tri-tip barbecue. We get a taco truck. It's a really awesome tournament. And to make it viable, and this is something that Britain has decided to do that I think is really interesting. He's taken the space that he has, which originally had envisioned for a 30, 40 person Kings of War tournament, and now has opened it up to multiple game systems. So we're still having a Kings of War tournament, but it allows him to still run a Kings event and be financially viable in that he can get the space. And then he has some other gaming friends coming. There's going to be people playing Saga, Shatterpoint, 40K, old school, like Epic 40K, all sorts of random game systems. The Bay of Kings has become a little mini convention. Really excited for that. Right now I'm getting stuff ready. The Kings of War tournament's going to have a paint award like any normal Kings of War tournament, but they're also doing a paint competition for the whole event, and it can be whatever you want. So I'm bringing some of the recent MCP models that I've been painting as my most recent stuff I've been painting. I'm going to bring those down for the paint competition. So that's been super fun, just getting ready for that. Masters planning is full swing. We're getting that organized, breaking it down by component. So we have different like subcommittees, basically, where we have the czar who's in charge of terrain. We have someone who's doing all the prize support, someone who's doing the logistics. So we're really not putting it on anyone's shoulders and instead really approaching it from a committee and a team perspective. So we're really excited getting that ready. Been playing some UB, trying to get the rust off. Masters showed me I needed to be playing a little bit more. So I've been playing some test games with the new Abyssals, trying them out. You know, they've spoiled the Nagari. I think I'm ordering sushi. They spoiled them with the 4+ regeneration aura.
What'd you think?
I think it's cool. I have some Abyssal builds that try to maximize on that 4+ aura with the Abyssal Guard, who are the defense 5. Even some of the other elements, seeing like, is there a sneaky sort of under the radar, super survivable Abyssal list?
Played against a list last night, which was 3 Fiends, 3 Flying Fiends, 3 or 4 Hordes of Lower Abyssal, Nagari, and that might have been the whole list. And it's pretty hard to kill.
Infantry Hordes with that 4-gen regen aura would be pretty tasty.
I think there's something there. There might be an archetype now in Abyssals that is sort of, if you don't kill it in one shot, it's coming back sort of build. But I got to play last night with Tom Annis on UB, one of my great buddies, and good, reasonable head on his shoulders.
The steward of positivity. Someone's got to be there to balance you out, Jeremy.
Exactly. Yeah, with my negativity, my toxic vomit that comes out of my mouth. We'll be doing a Scrying Gems episode soon once the book is released, sir, where we look at every single faction's command orders, all the updates. We haven't done a Scrying Gems in a little bit. We'll talk a little bit about U.S. Masters performance. We'll talk a little bit about Clash of Kings, which as we record this is moments away. But it's cool. I feel good. I always feel rejuvenated, I guess, after a Masters or after a big convention like that. You come back and you're kind of pulling out all the Kings stuff, trying to figure out what's going to be my Kings projects going into the fall. What about you, Matt?
Me in particular, there's not a Not a huge amount. I've been crook most of this week, but I think I said on the last Fireside or one of our episodes that the Masters pack wasn't quite out, so it is now, as is the side event pack, although it's not quite finished. So those things are up. We've got about 25 tickets sold for Clash in January, and I think about 8 or 9 for Firefight on the third day. That's pretty good. I expect that to ramp up over the next month as people become increasingly aware of it. To be honest, I'm just pumped for Clash updates. I wish we didn't have to wait till what is going to be likely another 6 weeks, I reckon, before we've got books in our hands or so. I'd love to have it now, but that's all good. What about yourself, Rob?
Echo what you guys said. It was an interesting week for the community. Excited to see how they take the rest of the Clash of Kings changes. For me personally, Kings of Memphis planning is underway. We are going to hold it June 21st through 22nd in 2025. And since this is number 5, guys, I always use like a spin on a movie title. So like last year was like Goblet of Stealthy, and we've done Revenge of the Bard. The problem is there's not a lot of great movies that are the number 5 in their series. So I'm trying to come up with a good name for that. And I'm also trying to think about how to work Command Dice into the Bard, because I think that's a natural thing now. And I'm really excited about the opportunity to add progressive scoring to the event, but I've got to look at the counter chart scoring because, you know, we don't have attrition score. We just have a primary, which is like a max win, minor win, all the way down to major loss. And bonus points, secondaries. I got to look and see because there's a lot of points available in some of those scores. I just got to see how it distributes out. But I'm looking forward to that. So let's jump into the hobby updates and I'll kick us off. Not a whole lot going on in the hobby. It's a lot of me pulling out boxes of old models and looking at them longingly. So Dan and I have been talking about Lucidated Brawl. So I did dig out the Underwater Abyssal Army. You know, I was pleasantly surprised. I was like, okay, this army, it's built, but it's not painted. It's been around for a while, but the basing is pretty cool. I made some generic bases and I resin cast them, and then I added elements to them like coral or reefs or barnacles. And the army as is today looks really great. Now, that being said, I'm not using metal Molochs. Sorry, bro. Those are got to go. But we're talking about it. And I'm really looking forward to starting that process. You know, this is only a 1,000-point army for me. So that's one that I can really sink my teeth into and spend a little extra time. And, you know, Dan and I are talking about how to subvert expectations with the armies we're choosing to go with. Matt, how about you? What's going on the hobby front?
Pumping away at the Northern Alliance, and I've just sent you a Kings of Memphis idea, Rob.
That's a great idea. You Only Live Twice?
Yep. It's the 5th James Bond movie. Sean Connery.
There's a pun there.
Yeah.
Much better than The Final Frontier, which is Star Trek.
So for me on the hobby, smashing into my Northern Alliance, there's a chance I'm going to an event in a few weeks. So if I want to do that, I've got to finish in the next couple of weeks 2 units of Pack Hunters, a unit of Icekin Hunters, so all regiments, another horde of Frostclaws and Frostclaw character, and a Thane on Frostfang. You know, I've got a bit to get through, but I've got the purple on. I'm working on the next color. I actually think it's achievable. I think it's achievable, so that's what I'm working away with, and I've been printing the bits I need for the bases, so I'm just full steam ahead, painting as we speak right now. What about yourself, Jeremy?
Been doing lots of things. I pulled out the EOD that I had been working on for a bit. You know how sometimes, especially when you're like me, you start an army project and you're super motivated and you get a bunch done and then something else. I'm like the epitome of the meme where the guy's walking and looks at the girl walking past them and then the girlfriend's mad. That's like me with armies. So I was like, how much did I actually do with EOD? So I took everything out and I actually have like a lot done. All the bases are done. I had that one especially base for the horde of skeleton warriors that I think had come out super cool. It's like a shame that this is not being used for anything.
Yeah, I had loved where you're up to on EOD because they're Mantic, right, as well?
Full Mantic, yeah.
And I reckon you're onto something because I was talking to this when we did our episode with Chris Lynch. People still haven't grasped onto the big blocks of nerves that can now scout.
Yeah.
Paul Cravo at Masters has figured that out. I think his army had a lot of it.
And I played against him. Saw Paul Cravo as a very unique list. And then I'm going to be playing EOD at Bay of Kings. So using Britain lets me use his undead and flex it as that. I got EOD on the brain a little bit now. Kind of been taking a look at that. What do I have left for that? All the bases are done. I mean, I started doing some of the enslaved guardians. I started to do my scavengers that were a mix of the murder birds and also ravens from Dark Eldar and 40K. So it was going to be like a flock. And looking back at it, I was surprised at how much I actually had done. My monolith is done. One of my reanimated behemoths, I converted Acronius to be a reanimated behemoth. That's all finished, painted. I'm thinking of maybe returning to the EOD just because of how much of it was actually finished. So I've been doing that. I'm still loving the Fanatic paints, the new Fanatic paints from Army Painter. So I got a lot of stuff out. Part of being moving too, if you could see my camera on right now, I have boxes everywhere. I'm trying to get organized, and part of that has me taking out a lot of half-finished projects. And we say this, and you guys are going to give me crap, and I know is whatever. I think I need to start finishing some things. I say that every year, but I'm actually really being like, dude, I have too much half-finished stuff. I need to, even if I finish it and never, you know, use it, I need to start trying to finish some projects. So I've been thinking a lot about EOD. I think I might try to pick up, maybe paint some skeletons, see if I can remember how I did it. Try a couple things with these new paints. You know, since that's all Mantic too, because that's the goal, right? Trying to get an all Mantic Kings of War army on the table here at some point. But yeah, so it's been good.
And next up, we've added a new section to the show, feedback and engagement. This is going to be a section that we're going to scrape from the internet some of our favorite comments. First up, we're very interested if you're a Countercharge listener and you're only engaging the community using the Kings of War forum rather than Facebook. Because a lot of our engagement's on Facebook, and we're trying to get a sense of what does the audience look like that would want to engage us on the forum. I have been terrible at keeping that up to date, but I want to get a sense of who's out there. You can hit us up at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com. We're going to try to be more active on those places. Same thing with Spotify and Podbean and all that. So, but let's get into this month's feedback. First up, we've got a piece of feedback from Chloe, who was commenting on our fireside chat in July. Thinks Jeremy needs to play Old World. Sounds like a GW CEO. So I don't know. You must have had a rant back then, Jeremy. I'm usually the curmudgeon, right, Matt?
I'm assuming in that episode that Jeremy was talking about use of Mantic miniatures, which I don't know. I reckon it's any CEO of any miniature company would speak like that, right?
Yeah, maybe I was saying use Mantic models, trying to be tyrannical about you got to use our models or we're going to not let you play our games. Maybe that was the milieu from which that observation was taken.
You can be my CEO any day, Jeremy.
Oh, well, so, thank you.
It doesn't matter what company it's from.
I mean, it's all good. We're going to be talking about proxies today, so I imagine there's going to be a little bit more of CEO Jeremy coming in today, so...
We also have a comment from Podbean from Rustling Medusa, episode 723, which was the doubleheader, which was about terrain. I had a conversation with Chase. And then, Matt, you did a little ambush recap in Australia. His summarization was, interviewee, Night Stalkers are like Tyranids. Interviewer, yep, you're right. Me, wait, what? That was an interesting comment for those of us that have been around for, you know, the whatever it is, 9 years since second edition. There is a connection to Tyranids. We could just spend a few minutes exploring it. If you go back to the very first time we had Night Stalkers, which is the 2015 Uncharted Empires book, if you look at some of the concept art, it is very Tyranid looking. Spider, crab-like. It has that Tyranid vibe. What plays into that as well is there were no Night Stalker models back then. What we did see a lot of is there were a lot of people that did play Tyranids, among other things, like clowns or sort of like, is it called the Boggart in Harry Potter? Like the thing that you imagine is your worst nightmare.
Yeah.
That's what manifests. So people took that kind of literally.
And you're 100% right. I'd totally forgotten that. And with the concept art. So I'm pretty sure they were released in the book that they released at the Death of the Old World, right? Or the first Clash of Kings after. And it was basically released without any models at all.
September, October of 2015.
Yeah, it was like their IP without models, you know? It was like that. And I'm assuming, I think it was in that chat, I'm assuming it was when I was talking to Cody, who was a, you know, teenager playing his first games. And I think he must have said something along the lines of, oh, I like the Night Stalkers because they're a bit like Tyranids because he'd played 40K before. And I think not in terms of fluff or play style or anything like that, but just in terms of a design ethos, I guess.
You go back and we listen to what Matt Gilbert said when he created the Night Stalkers. It was kind of that army, that big boogeyman, the one you can't see, comparisons to Tyranid or maybe more alien xenomorph, right? But what's really interesting is I went down this rabbit hole and you look at some of that concept art from way back then. Some of it is dead ringers for what we ended up with. Like if you look at the Scarecrow concept art, it's exactly what we got, as is the Mind Screech. So we'll have some of that in the show notes. I appreciate these kind of comments because it kind of makes us think about the evolution of the game. The Trident Realm and the Night Stalkers came out. They didn't have any models. It's timely for the conversation about proxies we're going to have. Really appreciate the comment.
Those pictures that you're going to post, Rob, they really took me back. You know, I can literally remember like having that book open, reading them, going, oh, this is a cool idea. And that's all you had because you had no models. Like, you just had this concept stuff. I always loved the Night Stalkers as, other than, say, something like Basileia, it was almost their first forge into their own IP.
Well, certainly from second edition. Basileia, and if I recall correctly, that was part of first edition. Not the beta, but first edition. In the Uncharted Empires, I mean, that's the first time we got the fish people, right? And the Night Stalker. Appreciate the comment. Like I said, if you guys make comments, we're going to do our best to scrape them off the internet, answer them, or comment on them going forward. Another reminder, if you are listening to us on Podbean or Spotify or Apple Podcasts, we'd love to have a review. That helps spread the word about the podcast.
Yeah, and not just us, help spread the word about the game. It's only going to come up in people's feeds more highly if people do give us, you know, a good rating and help push us up the charts a little bit. If people are looking for things that are kind of like what they're already listening to, and, you know, it might help get some new stuff in front of some new people.
And I also want to mention Unplugged Radio is back. They are on Apple Podcasts. They're on Spotify, various services. So if you've been looking to get your fix of Mike Rossi and Greg Person and John Vanas, it's available. So make sure you go out there and listen. And if you're one of those people who like to listen off the internet, you know, just a website, you know, we are hosting them on countercharge.net. If you go to countercharge.net, there's a button that says Unplug Radio 2. The 2 is designated. This is the next version. Let's take a quick commercial break. And on the other side, we'll get into this month's topic, which, guys, this one exploded. We said we wanted to have a controversial topic. Mission success.
I got my seatbelt on.
We'll be right back.
I'm Steve Hildre, and you're listening to Countercharge.
Welcome back to Countercharge, and we're going to jump into this month's topic of the month. We went with a two-parter, which they are connected. The first question we asked you was, should Mantic go all in on the vault and stop producing resin miniatures, apart from perhaps 3D printing their own? And then the second question we asked was proxies. What is acceptable and what is not? Where do you draw the line? I think for the most part, we got great answers. Let's just jump in.
Raymond Crum was our first cab off the ranks. I actually think Mantic moving from resin to selling STLs is the way to go. Any smaller company does it better without the logistics and risk of making figures. I'm kind of surprised Mantic hasn't partnered with an STL producer like has been done for Ninth Age. And we will see this repeated, is that the second part of the question was, apart from perhaps 3D printing their own. You know, we're not talking about them never producing a model in resin. We're talking about them stopping casting resin, that not everyone has a 3D printer. And so perhaps it would be more efficient. I mean, that's how we end up with the Lord of Lies being $80 USD, is because it's so expensive to produce.
Labor cost is high.
Yeah. And to be honest, I can tell you, any miniature I print from Mantic now, people look at it and go, what you've produced is way better than the resin cast version, because you don't have the mold lines, you can reduce some of the assembly. Not that their resin isn't good. As far as like across the market goes, their resin's pretty good sometimes if you get the right parts in the box.
Yeah, that's the real issue, right? Is you sometimes it's Russian roulette. You don't know what you're going to get.
Like, just because they've got their resin department set up and everything like that is not a reason necessarily to keep doing it, in my mind. Like, I feel like it would be far cheaper for them to buy a few printers and produce quality models on demand. And then the real controversial topic, I think, is Raymond's answer to the second question is, I'm pretty fine with any level of proxings, barring the actively offensive ones that pushed by edgelords back in the bad old days. So Skaven concentration camp, etc. I think Kings of War did well by being a game that is open about alternate figures. And I think attempting to put the genie back in the bottle will greatly damage or kill the game. I don't think anyone's trying to put the genie back in the bottle. I think people are saying, let's promote the use of Mantic miniatures. I guess if he's saying, if you can pretty much tell what it is within an army list that he's okay with it.
In my mind, there's proxies and then there's count as, and those are different things. You know, a proxy is just an alternate model. A count as is, oh, I am going to take this dragon and this is my horde of pipe.
I agree. And I think counts as are much more problematic.
Don't bring space marines and tell me they're abyssal dwarves.
Does something that looks sci-fi belong in the fantasy universe when you're expecting to look across the table and know exactly what it is? So as soon as it's holding guns... you know, or something else. Like, let's just say I was playing against a dwarf list and someone's holding guns or something, like it's a complete sci-fi dwarf model, something forge fathery. How do I know crossbows? Is it rifles? And yes, I can look at the list, and if there's no other guns, then maybe like I will have a good game against it and it will be fine. But for me, it does add something to reducing new player experience. And our game has a massive problem with growth and bringing new players in.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to, right? It's growth. And I think these are two important conversations to have, because I think they do affect growth, right? Which is cost of models, quality of models, and then also when I go into a store, do I know what I'm playing against? And I mean, I always go back to, you know, it's a famous Supreme Court Justice Potter Stewart, who in 1964 said about pornography, I can't describe it, but I know it when I see it. That to me counts as and proxies. I know when you're taking the piss. And I love you guys, the people who run it. My Little Pony Army. I'm sorry. For me, that's dumb. That's my opinion. You can have your own opinion. For me personally, I'm not playing a miniature wargaming hobby to play against a My Little Pony Army.
For me, it breaks my immersion.
Yeah.
I have the same argument with unpainted models, right? Like, I don't want to go to a 2-day and play an unpainted army. That doesn't make any sense.
And I love Aaron. Aaron's a good guy. You know, I'm not saying anything bad against him. He put a lot of energy and effort into it. But again, that's a lot different than, let's say, Shannon Shoemaker, who likes to use the arachnid spider as a chariot legion. With guys shooting off the... That's a count says I can start to sort of get my head around.
It is kind of, you know it when you see it though, right? Like I would like to be able to say, this is where I draw the line. I don't know where the line is until I see that you crossed it. Let's jump into Nathan Cerrone's response. And he said, for number one, I would love to see all Mantic resin on the vault at some point. I basically refuse to buy any because the quality of the resin kits is never good enough to justify the cost. Upgrade kits for salamanders, for example. And the second comment is, honestly, depends on the setting. A 1-day tournament, go nuts. A local 2-day, as long as I can tell what it is, fine. Did the person have to fly in so they packed an army that's easy to fly with but looks nothing like what they are playing? I would be annoyed internally as a knee-jerk reaction. But if they're coming that far to play, would just be glad to have them out. So on his first comment, what he's really talking about there is the value proposition. Quality of the resin is fine, but when you compare it to the cost... The value proposition may not be there for all people. Dude, playing $20 for a rhino calf? Totally get it. And I've done it. In terms of his comment for number two, I am in agreement there as well. It depends on the event.
You're touching on the important point, how I see gaming, is that you're talking about a social contract, right? Gaming isn't just about you on your side of the table. You know, you're playing with a friend or someone who also enjoys their hobby. And I totally get the argument that, oh, I might really enjoy and put a lot of effort into my Lego army or whatever. I get that. But you're playing a game against someone else. And before you go and play with blank bases, Rob, I'm sure you said to the person, I really want to try out the Abyss. You know, do you mind if I bring blank bases and just write the names on it? Yeah, sure, that's fine. The social contract is met. When you're going to a tournament, you don't have that opportunity. You're not going to go through, you know, the 20, 30 people and go, oh, is this okay? Is this okay? Is this okay? At some point when you're doing some of these armies, what you're basically saying is, I only care about my experience.
And you bring up a good point, right? If I'm running a 1-day tournament and my expectation is I'm going to have a lot of new players, bring whatever you want. It doesn't matter if it's painted, unassembled, whatever, because that's sort of the audience environment you're in. Again, that idea of I know it when I see it. So I know the group I'm with. So I think you can have different expectations for different levels of gaming. Bring up such a great point, which is have that conversation. Talk to your TO, talk to your opponents, come to that agreement ahead of time on what you guys and your group is deeming acceptable. As a non-resin printer, this idea of them moving to 3D printing or resin printing is not the idea that they won't sell me models anymore because I don't print. So I think we still need a way for non-printers to buy those models, but maybe we're thinking about maybe they get some high-end resin printers on site. The resin cast guy now becomes a resin print guy. We still want them to be able to sell the people who don't have printers models, right?
100%.
All right, let's jump into Erasmus's comment. Answer for number one is that's a business decision that only Mantic are in a position to make. I think that demanding that Mantic make business decisions based on my preferences or my necessarily less informed opinion is a bit silly. You know, my response to that is, that's why we're having these conversations, right? Like, because we as a community need to tell Mantic what our preferences are. They have sales data, Matt. We've touched on it a few times. They have sales data that tells them what's selling and what's not. But also, if we're vocal about this or what we would like to see, typically a good business is going to respond. Erasmus makes a good point, which is, you know, we're not demanding anything, right? This is just our opinion. We don't know all the details, Matt. We don't know what the sales data is like. They might be selling resin like crazy, and there's no financial reason that they should quit that.
Demands aren't usually posed as questions.
The answer to the second question is it depends on what you mean. And maybe this gets to the proxy versus count as thing, right? So using non-official models is fine by me as long as the models visually convey a rough idea of what the unit can do in the game. That's a proxy. And I'm okay with that if it's reasonable. Using something that is obviously not representing the unit being played as is only acceptable in a try before buy game, in my opinion. The proxy stuff, typically okay with it. It's the count-ass stuff where it's like, I keep saying Space Marines. Could be MCP, you know, or Star Wars Legion. I think we actually did have someone that brought a Star Wars Legion one time.
Agree with those points. And I think that's probably why it is so problematic, right, is there are elements that are fluid. You know, there are elements that are fluid and considerations. It's the same reason that if, like, to a one-dayer, that there's a bunch of a certain type of army coming, that I bring something different. Because to me, it's about the player experience as a whole. Now, should everyone be like that? No, probably not. But I think everyone should have in mind, what is my opponent's experience in general going to be like? Or am I just putting an army on the table that's all about me?
One of the reasons we have sports scores.
100%.
I think one thing that comes out of that, too, is intent. I think intent is really important, too, when you're talking about proxies and sort of that malleable nature of proxies. And I think the reason why this is such an interesting discussion is that there is no just answer A or answer B around this topic. It's many faceted, and there's lots of different ways to approach this. I know I'm much more willing, especially in a test game, blank bases, doesn't matter, even at events, to cut people slack if each time I'm seeing them each week they've done a little bit more. Are they done? Like, what's the intent? You know, is the intent just to, you know, never put any energy into the game? And if that's your bag, you know, there's lots of ways to buy pre-painted models, other things to do, I think, to get you to that point as far as having something bare bones. I mean, I think the invention of contrast paints, right? I think the level to get a painted army right now is as low as it's been in all of miniature wargaming that I've been involved in miniature wargaming.
I just think back to where we just were at the US Masters and Nova, and there were other game systems that I would be embarrassed to play against and with some of those armies. And to be fair, that might be the culture that they deem acceptable. You know, as I say that, it's not just about my opponent's experience. It's also what I'm investing into it. But how about the models? Those models are not cheap. I have a hard time just slapping paint on a model when they are, in some cases, so expensive.
Okay, next we have Terry Erickson. So even though I have a 3D printer, I would hate to see Kings of War become dependent on 3D printing, as some people aren't participating in that arm of the hobby. You know, great point, Terry, and it's the point that we've already talked to, right, which is always have a path for us non-3D printers to still acquire the models. But Vault, I think, you know, has been a pretty much unmitigated success for Mantic. As far as proxies go, as long as the model represents the core of the unit, like what you were talking about, Rob, it makes sense. Like spears for phalanx units are some kind of ranged weapon for a shooting unit. I'd use a lot of different options for a cool theme, like snake man salamanders or pirate ogres. But the goal would be, if I print an army that I really enjoy playing, I would replace the printed proxy army with a Mantic one over time to play at tournaments. Otherwise, I'll use proxy armies to teach, giveaway to help spread the KOW bug. So far, this to me is a fantastic answer, right? He's saying if you use proxies and they're a ranged unit, the proxy should have a ranged weapon, right? Because then I can look at it and know what it does. But you don't want to take away the idea of doing like a pirate ogres or snake man salamanders, or really the idea of theme that you can do when you can use whatever models you want. But yet he has the frosting on the cake is, I'm still also trying to build Mantic armies, you know, within to support the company that I love. So I don't know what you guys think, but I thought this was a great answer.
And I actually totally agree. I would hate to see some of the awesome theme armies disappear in favor of like always all Mantic. You know, I think we need to promote Mantic, but like there are some awesome theme armies out there.
I just think of Scott Holcomb's Pirate Kingdoms of Men army is another one, which is just amazing. That army is good for the game, right? It gets eyeballs, stuff like that. But it's just realizing that that is one pathway and not the only pathway.
Well, I think in the episode with Kyle that you mentioned, we don't want people to feel like they have to buy Mantic models. That shouldn't be a thing. What should be, though, is if it's like anything in your life that you get enjoyment from, you should give back, whatever that is. You know, it could be money. It could be time. It could, you know, investment, engagement.
Okay, next on the list is we have Hank. I'm assuming this is Hank DeTank, like from, it's a funny name, but Hank DuTank. I'll pronounce it that way. He says they should still offer some of the people without printers that want to buy them, but I otherwise don't see it, the downside. Similar to how Firefight uses some models from other companies and Warlord's horses being used in Kings of War, Mantic team up with SDL sculptors and make their models the official sculpts for Kings of War, units to fill in ranges, being able to retail the very pretty Bestarium Beastmen as Herd or Lost Kingdom Skinks as Salamanders would definitely draw some eyes to the game on store shelves. Let's stop there for a second. I want to riff on that while we're doing it. And I know, Matt, you've been a really big proponent of this, of not maybe going full STLs or 3D printing right away, but offering a Kings of War army exclusively through the vault, or partnering with some 3D sculpts to offer, like, here's a brand new sculpt instead of something that we've already done in resin. Here's a brand new Julius, our brand new 3D printed Samacris. We'll print it and sell it to you if you want it, or by the STL. But I think there is some space for them to develop STL forward thinking model design, as opposed to always thinking about model design from the how are we going to make it physically.
Well, you make a good point about even maybe some of those singular characters, because we know that even GW, they say that the vast majority of the people that buy their models aren't playing the game, right? So if you make some super cool singular characters, there's a chance you sell it to a whole bunch of people, that STL to a whole bunch of people who never ever play Kings of War. From a like financial perspective, I think there's some potential there for sure.
And then as far as the proxy question, Hank says, I think the individual sizes of models should be consistent. So a unit of infantry would be made up of guys who roughly fit on a 20 millimeter square. It starts getting weird when there's a single huge monster on that base and who is somehow supposed to be the same height as the infantry. So that's that, Rob, you brought it up, the proxy versus counts as. It's nice to easily tell who can see over what, otherwise go nuts. So that's another really interesting point about, in Kings of War, we have abstract line of sight. Being able to kind of know what's height 2, what's height 3, what's height 4 makes sense. And you don't want to catch someone out with a giant flying demon or whatever and be like, oh, no, that's regular infantry. So you can't see me, even though I'm twice as big as everything else.
Yeah, abstract line of sight means you can't model for advantage. And the flip side is, in a game with true line of sight, when you have an official model or an official unit, it's more important what the unit looks like because it's true line of sight.
Which is why one of the reasons that we don't like the Tortured Soul models.
Because they don't look like flyers.
And they're not big enough. I totally agree with this point from Hank. I think that's a really important part of proxying or counts as, is that it should represent the original model, not only in terms of what it does, but in terms of size because of that abstraction of line of sight. All right, next we have Asante Russ, friend of the show, top contributor. That's what Facebook tells me. Asante says, I like the vault. I like the ability to get models or see what is in the mix when my store does not carry them due to how they operate. And two, proxy should be what you see is what you get. I do not care if one uses the models as long as they are representing the actual model well. A few armies I've seen that there were different models and confusing. One army I remember was using different minions. I agree with that. Like, what you see is what you get is really important, even when you are using correct miniatures. And this can be challenging because, let's say, Northern Alliance, the Huskarls, the Pack Hunters, and the Tribesmen, all the same base model for the unit and the differences of them. So you can't have all of those in there and use them with the same type of weapons. You know, you need the two-handed weapons, you need the javelin, you need the bow, so that you just go, bang, bang, bang. That's what it is. Let's move on. Again, it's part of that social contract. Next up, we've got David Hall. I've not got a 3D printer and I'm not likely to in the near future. I'd like the option to buy the resin models or upgrade parts. Yep. So again, I don't think we're saying get rid of it. I think we're saying should they move to a different type of model with it. It's a great point, Jeremy, that you make about them not accessing 3D printers, because I actually think, even though that side of the hobby has grown more and more, it is more likely that people, as world continues to grow, that density of housing and thing goes up into like apartments and things, right? So there's going to be, always going to be a massive amount of people that can never have a printer unless the whole poison thing gets sorted out. Being able to meet that demand is important for sure.
Yeah, I don't think 3D printing is going to be like a microwave. I've had this conversation, you know, with my group so much of, how ubiquitous is that going to become a part of the hobbyist's life? And I think that there still is a chemical component, a space component, and a skill component involved in 3D printing at this stage. That's not going to be everyone's cup of tea. So I don't know in the next 5 years we're going to see every single hobbyist in our hobby has a 3D printer. I just don't know if it's going to take 10 years. Who knows? But I wonder that idea.
David makes a good point about accessibility. How they deliver the models, there's many ways to do that, but they need to have their customers be able to get a hold of them. Whether that's resin casting, whether that's them printing them themselves, like kind of what Privateer Press did before they sold out to Steamforged, or working with independent independent partners to do the printing. So, or moving it to plastic. Why not move some of the stuff to plastic?
And then we've got Mark Zielinski for resin. Not yet. Resin 3D printing is not as widespread as people think it is. And two, if I can't tell what it is, please don't use it.
So I've got Jordan Nichols next, and his answer to number one is Mantic should start 3D printing their own minis instead of going all in with the Vault. Not everyone has access to 3D printing, and giving out more merchant licenses could lead to a potential negative brand impact to Mantic with varying print qualities that could end up existing from merchants on the market. Having Mantic print their own minis still provides a direct revenue source to the company, gives them control of the print quality, and points to them as a source of supply for their hobby. I prefer 3D printing over resin because the models always end up much cleaner and stronger than a resin cast. Resin casts have mold lines that require cleaning and bubbles, which bring visual modeling issues or even potential weak points in the model. There's a lot there to unpack. The one piece of data we do have is obviously Privateer Press, and I would offer up that they did go this route where they didn't sell the vials, they sold the printed models directly from themselves, not through a third party. And I don't think it went well. That's not to say that Mantic couldn't figure it out. But by the way, I just want to say I appreciate everybody's positivity and everybody taking the time to give us these great answers, because it's thought-provoking. The answer to the second question is proxies are acceptable on two conditions. The first being that they are clearly defined in their appearance by what they are. Example, a tank should not be a proxy for a flying vehicle, and an orc should not be a proxy for a human. New players are top in mind in this. However, this also impacts everyone's playing experience. When a player has to consistently remind themselves what proxies are what, it takes away from play experience by slowing down play time and strategy decisioning by having to focus on what the model is rather than how to interact with it on the battlefield. Second, they should attempt to make a level of conversion done to them where Mantic elements are brought in. Example, a Marauder Mantic model is inserted as a pilot to a 3D printed vehicle. That's a good example of where, you know, you could take something and maybe you don't like a specific tank. Well, you can still Mantic-fy it by adding extra bits. You could add a pilot, as he mentions in this, or a driver. This helps ensure that Mantic benefits from the conversion, at least in some way, and helps with identification of the model. Ultimately, though, I would much rather see the right vehicle or model with the wrong weapon than a totally different model with the right weapon. Just let your opponent know which weapon it has prior to the game starting. Agreed. I'm a big fan in these cases of just magnetizing all the weapons. All right, next up we have Dylan Scribner. First answer, he says, I definitely think going all in on the Vault is the future for Mantic. With the quality of miniatures that can be produced with high-end printers, I really don't see why the thousands spent on resin production can't be pivoted into a 3D printing farm instead. Interesting. He's also pointing to, like, why can't they do the printing themselves? I mean, I guess you could. That's something I hadn't really thought about. They could. They're printing these models to make the resin casts, right? Like, these are 3D printed files that are then 3D printed on a much higher end machine to get clean prints, which they cast off of. Certainly is a possibility. His answer to the second question is, I think that anything that can provide the illusion of the unit being represented is fair game, as I feel that the artistic freedom of Kings of War is nearly half the selling point. So whether it's the tabletop role-playing or tabletop wargaming, there is an element of the verisimilitude. By the way, props to Dylan for using a big word.
Maybe he did his answer with AI.
Oh, you know what? Maybe. Required in the social contract to truly enjoy the abstraction that our games represent. So we should lean towards a willing suspension of disbelief rather than nitpicking. However, half-empty bases or using ogres as forest shamblers is definitely crossing the line. That's a good example of a count-as that I don't like.
Do we know, just out of curiosity, let's say I'm going to cast resin. I'm working for Mantic, right? I'm in the resin cast studio. This someone ordered a phoenix. I'm going to pour the resin, cast it, as opposed to, oh, someone ordered a phoenix. I'm going to print it on the resin printer. Just from like a business standpoint, is that similar amount of time? I mean, I'm just not really well-versed.
No, it's not at all. Obviously, we casted a blaster model.
Okay.
I think we were only getting 25 casts per mold on resin.
Okay.
In that scenario that you just gave, I assume if they're making phoenixes, they're going to cast up a bunch of phoenixes and have them on the shelf. Resin casting is not cost-efficient. It's really not cost-efficient if you're going to do one at a time.
So 3D printing is almost even more cost-efficient because you don't have stuff... You don't have stuff on your shelf unsold.
You hit the button.
Yeah.
You know, you're not having to mix up the resin.
Yeah, and you're not paying for storage space other than your printers.
You're printing it when it's ordered. Because that's one question in this dynamic, right? Is does it financially make sense to logistical to make that switch over?
I think what we don't know is how many models they sell at a time. We don't know, you know, on a given day, how many Phoenixes are ordered.
Do they get on a random Friday, they need to send out 30 Phoenixes?
Yeah.
Because that to me is like, how would you even do that unless you had 30 printers or you had the printer farm going?
I would still think 3D printing would be faster. Resin, you got to pour it. You got to let it set. It's got to harden. You got to take it out. You got to mold it. You got to clean it, blah, blah, blah. 3D printing, I mean, some of these beds now are pretty big. You might be able to print, I don't know, Matt, how many Phoenixes could you print in one go on your printer?
Mine are smaller. I'd only be able to do one at a time, but my larger one, I'd easily do two, actually. That's why they would need a bit of a farm of it. But that's the thing. They've got data, right? They would know how to do it. And you'd probably list on the website, we print to demand.
Your customer is accepting of that weight. For me, if I'm ordering one, you know, I'm going to pay a lot cheaper. Knowing that it's printed on demand, I probably would be more accepting of a little delay in shipping time.
Yeah.
If I'm getting that value some other way. Okay, next we have one of the Temple brothers, Matthew. He says, yes, I think technology has gotten to the point where 3D printed traditional resin casts are basically the same quality. This is something you guys have talked about. Similar quality, right, between and maybe even some better in some 3D printers. Switching everything to 3D printed makes sense to me. Matthew, in talking about proxies, says proxies are fine. As long as it's easy to look at the unit and know what it is. Again, that idea of knowing what it is. Unit of guys with wings that fly, right? Simple way to see and understand. What is not okay are armies that you have to look at and have no idea what unit it is, or that it's painted in a confusing way. He gives an example of two units are the same models, but one unit is snow foxes and the other are tundra wolves. Now that is interesting. When you have similar units in an army and you're using proxies, to know the difference between this is light chaff foxes or these are the ones that are actually punchy, and I got to know the difference between the two. So, wow, astute observation. Okay, next we have AJ Jeff, which to me is like a professional wrestler's name. Intercontinental champion AJ Jeff. I don't have a 3D printer and I'm not likely to get one, so that would push me away as a customer. No issues with proxies as long as I know what they represent.
Again, he's just talking to the fact if he doesn't have 3D printing, it still needs to be accessible.
Yep. Next up, we've got Dan Harwood. Probably better business model to print on demand rather than cast resin, but move everything resin to the vault over time. And two, it should represent the unit without confusion. I play herd and technically my whole army is made up of proxy minis, but it's pretty clear what it is. If I was using human swordsmen as longhorns, that would be dumb. There is a difference between casual play and tournament play, obviously. And, you know, I've played Dan quite a few times and I know exactly what every unit in his army is. And they're just from a different manufacturer. I mean, you can't have herd Mantic models really anyway. And then Danny Graves, he says, hell no, I love Mantic resins. They're lovely and fun to put together, and I'd far rather buy and build them than 3D print. He says he's got a printer, but it's been in a box for 2 years because it's a hassle. It is a hassle. I'd agree with that. And number two, it's got to be at least similar and within the theme. A giant wolf as a hydra is fine if it's a wolf theme army and there isn't too much confusion between units. I've used shamblers as forest trolls, that kind of thing. Cavalry must be at least be models that would look and behave like cavalry. I think Danny's alluding to that a themed army can be okay, you know, if it's still really obvious. And I would imagine Danny would agree with the whole height thing, weapons thing, still reasonably what you see is what you get.
Next from Canada, we have Paul Forbes. Again, speaking to what you were talking about, Matt, he says, I like that they have purchasable miniatures. And again, the idea is not that they would not sell miniatures anymore, but how are they doing their internal production? I'm right there with you, Paul. I want to be able to buy stuff at the store or through Mantic as not a printer. Next, we have Jots Turk. Sorry if I mispronounce your name. He thinks keeping limited runs of resin models would be prudent for those that don't have access to vault or printing. 3D printing isn't quite click and print yet, which was I was, you know, trying to bring that up earlier. I got quoted $700 to print all the Orc Armada ships out by a company. That seems crazy. I ended up just buying a printer and doing it myself.
So Jets is local. I'm not sure where he got a quote, but I think there's also, there's 3D printing companies that are printing people like things like parts for people. And then there's your hobby store that has printers that are printing your models.
At a much lower resolution.
I've had experience before with some of those other companies quoting high, whereas I think you'd find your hobby stores often wouldn't be anywhere near as high.
And then he says, investing in better plastic for basic unit types with the ability to print different arms head would be great to allow for custom work to be done. And again, I keep going back to this, and I think it was a point we talked about when we had Kyle on the show. my dream would be, number one, Mantic is investing in designing and creating the coolest models possible. How they deliver them and how they print them, obviously, or how they make them, obviously, is an important part of that creation. But just coming back to the core point of, you should never be forced to buy something you don't like. Part of Mantic's responsibility as a company is to make models that we are excited to buy and those that we just don't buy out of loyalty or obligation. So good to be continuing to point out that it is their job to continue to develop cool new models. Number two, as long as the units are representative and not ripping the piss, is that still like, is that like taking the piss, but is how you say it in Australia?
I would say taking more than ripping, but same thing.
Okay. Having Mantic specific prizes as well as normal prizes get people using Mantic models. So it's the idea of having a specific hobby prize at a tournament for Mantic only armies. We've done that for a while as TOs, guys. I'm curious, do you think that's accomplished what we had hoped to accomplish when we first started thinking about hobby awards for Mantic-only armies? Has that moved the needle at all from a TO perspective?
I personally don't think so. Not as a hobby award, right? I don't think there's enough. So for Clash, the last couple of years, I've given some points for having some Mantic stuff in your army. And this year, there's a bit of a scale. And the scale is meant to encourage you that way. I know some people won't like that, but oh well. But I don't think a hobby award will really move the needle much at all, to be honest.
Best painted is a Mantic army at our event. I think Matt's right in the sense that I don't know that more Mantic armies show up because of that, but it does two things. One is it does have people look at Mantic models, and the armies that do show up that are Mantic are better and better and better. This notion about proxies and count as, I tackle that through scores. Does your unit accurately represent the model it's representing on the table?
Next up, we've got Mark Otley. So one, no, very important to have physical product. Two, wide latitude is okay, provided it's thematic and effortful. I think as we go through now, we're probably going to get some themes repeated, so we probably don't need to spend as much time discussing each one. So, you know, if we don't discuss your point in general, it's because we feel like we've already done it. Then we've got Jose Vega. In my opinion, proxies are okay as long as they actually represent the unit's overall features and height. I think that's meant to be. So again, the what you see is what you get and the abstraction thing. Matthew Selick, never heard of him. One, no, because it's not profitable without significant changes to subscription model analysis and cost. And then two, friendly garage games, anything goes. Tournaments, it's got to look like the unit plays.
So we have, next up, we have David Musgrave. His answer to the first question, don't own a 3D printer and very unlikely never will. The local game store is a licensed Mantic Vault printer. Big, and everything I've had has been great and decently priced, but don't want to have to rely on 3D printing services to get a large part of Mantic's range. It hugely reduces the off-the-shelf appeal and a lot of fantastic models. Heinrich Schliemann would say, if I'm playing Kings of War in the store, I need to be able to go over and buy those models from the shelf. His answer to the second question, proxies can be really dependent on why they are used, and also whether it's a really count as, rather than I don't have X, so I'm using Y. This nails it. Do it because it's cool, not because it's cheap.
It's one thing to have one beautifully painted army that you then play as six different armies.
Correct.
I play my Basileia as Basileia. I haven't tried to play them as Twilight Kin yet. You know what I mean? So that's another thing too, is sometimes that's like you're taking the piss a little bit when you have the one or two beautiful armies painted and each tournament you're playing it as something completely else. And we know the reason why that is because you haven't the time or energy or willingness to paint something else. And sometimes that gets old after a while, I think.
Well, it's even worse if it's not a beautifully painted army, Jeremy, if it's just a that you're just shoehorning into everything else.
David finishes up with, do the models being used represent the unit and its associated rules? Can it be mistaken for something else? And he makes the comment, proxies versus stand-ins. All right, the next comment we have is from Lee Missoula. He says, number one, I like being able to just buy a miniature since I don't have a 3D printer. I think the Vault is wonderful, though, and I'm glad that Mantic is supporting it so well. It is the future of the industry. Number two, he says, is one of the key selling points of Kings of War is that it's miniatures agnostic. Proxies are great as long as I understand what they are. The infamous My Little Pony army was fine because it's easy to recognize ponies as centaurs, cavalry units, and Pegasus units. The minis made sense to me when I looked at them. The Clown Nightstalker army was a little less obvious. The hobbyist behind that army, however, labeled the units clearly and made sure that the opponent could tell what they represented. Because of that, I would be happy to play against the army. It's not confusing or anything. Going back to what you said earlier, Matt, about social contract, other part of the social contract is we have to acknowledge that we all get different things out of the game. And our behavior is going to positively enforce or negatively hinder someone's enjoyment of the game. So for me, I see the game as three things. Play a clean technical game. You know, I want to have a good, solid, fun game. But number three is I want to have two pretty armies on the table.
No, I totally agree. And just because we've got these opinions doesn't mean, you know, that we're saying that it's the only opinion you can have and that we're right. There's obviously varying opinions. I think most people's opinions are coming back towards the same things.
Attitude and how you present the army is also really important. For the Night Stalker Clown army, John Hogue is pretty good about telling you what everything is. And throughout the game, reminding you if you have questions. The pilot of the proxy army also, I think, their attitude somehow is a spice in the stew.
If they're taking a piss and they don't acknowledge they're taking a piss, that makes me angry.
That does make me angry.
You're shitting on my game. Just admit it.
Yeah.
We're already at the table. There's nothing else I can do about it. I'm going to play the game.
It's the same thing with the guys who take broken ass lists and own it. And they're like, oh yeah, I know this is pretty broken, right? But they own it. And they're not trying to be like, oh, I'm taking this army to prove to the RC.
Oh, you know, it's not a very competitive army. It's a bad army when they've got the most busted unit repeated 5 times.
To me, it's, bro, you want to win, so you're taking a good army. Own the cheesiness of it.
100%.
I would have way more respect for you and would be more happy and fun to play against it if you acknowledge that. So anyway, so I think driver attitude of the army is an element. As Matt said, this is an arena of discussion where there's lots of different ideas. And just because we have a platform and a microphone doesn't make our ideas the only ones are intrinsically or inherently correct. So just take that as we're talking about this. These are just our ideas and thoughts as longtime war gamers, sort of how we feel about something. But you know what they say about opinions and assholes, right? Everyone's got one. So if you disagree with us, that's totally fine. You know, as I say, we're not trying to poo-poo on anyone's Cheerios.
Or hypothetical salads.
If you're bringing Cheerios and you're telling me they're Frosted Flakes, we're going to have a hard time. Cheerios are nothing like Frosted Flakes. That's a count as I will not accept on my breakfast table. Okay, Charles Friduk, as far as the proxy goes, he'd stop playing Kings if I could no longer proxy. There are models I want to paint and use in a game. I don't care if my opponents have blank bases and test games. And at a GT, as long as the models are consistent when representing multiple instances of the same unit, that's cool. So just being able, really, that idea of consistency, being able to know what stuff is. I've heard this discussion, and this is a controversial topic, so I guess we just go with it. We've heard this a lot, right? If I can't use whatever models I want to use, I'm no longer to play Kings of War anymore. I've heard that a lot, and I begin to wonder, for the greater growth of the game, do we have to take, as far as player base and player size, is there an argument to be made about the one step back, three steps forward? Is there some short-term pain we must take around this topic so that the game grows? Because letting people use whatever models they want and bring whatever they want, we're struggling with growth in the United States. So they say the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. We're not growing the way that we should in the U.S. Flat out, Bob's your uncle, that's the truth. So to me, it means we need to try something new or do something different. Trying to promote how we interact with models is maybe one of those new different things. Or I don't know how I feel about that. I guess when I'm hearing a player saying, well, if I can't use whatever model I want, or if I can't use an army that I've played for 20 years and I don't ever want to buy anything anymore, and why should I ever have to buy anything to play? I'm sort of starting to get tired of that a little bit, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
I mean, generally my response to ultimatums is see you later. But like Mantic have to produce better models to sell more models. I think that's the biggest thing out of anything. I don't think there's any going back from people using their miniatures that they want to use, particularly because 3D printing's a thing and there are so many good models out there. Rob's mentioned it before. As a TO, we can make sure there's scores for what you see is what you get, you know, that you're using wargaming miniature models. I think more than anything, what's holding us back is the lack of that variety around things like command dice and maybe some ultra competitiveness and things like that. I see your point, Jeremy. I mean, there's a chance it works, of course. I think Mantic just need to keep producing better models.
Maybe that's the silver bullet, right? Mm. Is that's really what we need. We need them to step up as a company and really say this is part of our core mission, vision, values is to produce models that make your jaw drop because they're few and far between. And they make a lot of okay to good models, but, you know, I want to go in and see a new release. Yeah, you want to see that. Oh, my God. We talked about this with Kyle, right? That model where you're like, I don't have an Abyssal model, but I've seen that Lord of Lies or I've seen that whatever, and now I'm going to make an army. just so that I can do that model.
Mention again, there's a difference between proxies and countisp. Whatever you want to label that thing as, are you seeing this as a cause or are you seeing this as a symptom? If you're seeing it as a cause, which means Mantic's not producing enough stuff that I enjoy or I want to paint, therefore it's causing me to the proxy, that's something Mantic can fix. If it's a symptom in the sense that I don't really want to invest in the game, that's not something Mantic can fix.
See you later. That's a person problem.
We need to figure out how to get increased player engagement. Look, there are armies they don't make models for, and we've been through it all over. Tony Nelson has an amazing Kingdoms of Men army. They don't make any of the models. I'm at a point in my life, I don't make ultimatums anymore. I never know if this is the hill I need to die on.
Because usually, even if you say yes to the ultimatum, usually it's never good, right? How many of those have you heard? If so-and-so doesn't propose to me, I'm going to break up. Well, usually that's probably not like a good sign of strength of your relationship.
Yeah, such a healthy relationship right there.
And that's what I'm saying, right? And for me, all this comes back to is how do we grow this game that we love? And a lot of these questions in the fireside chat, I think if you look for what's the Wizard of Oz behind the screen, it's thinking about these topics within that lens of, remember when we did our end of the year last year, really going into 2024, our mission was to grow the game. How can we grow the game? And here we are in month 9, and maybe we haven't seen that as much as we would want to have seen. So I think having these discussions is important for that through that lens of holistically, how do we encourage and inspire people to play this game that we love? Because in the core, it is a great game that we do love. Next on the list, we got David Heads. The Mantic store should be the everything Mantic store. There is so much on the vault that you can't get outside of printing the STLs, ghost ships, front rank upgrades, dead zone teams, etc. Making it accessible to those who do not have the income to spend on a quality 3D printer. Fantastic, right? That accessibility. I'm more likely to spend an extra $5 to $10 on buying a halfling front rank when buying some Braves off the website than go through the drama of finding a third party to do it for me, which here in New Zealand is tough unless it's private. If they are worried it will put people off the vault as they can just buy it, then maybe delay the release on the store. But if that is why people don't use the vault, it's because they can buy it instead, then still do it. So that's an interesting idea, right? Is allowing for those people who want to subscribe to the vault but don't have a 3D printer, if they did more 3D printing, I could order, hey guys, I want from this month's vault release, send me 20 stalwart arms, add it to my order, and then they could print it in-house and send it. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I'm surprised Dave's even heard of 3D printing in New Zealand yet. I wasn't sure it had made it.
This discussion mimics what we're seeing with video games, the move from physical media to digital media. You know, in this example, the resin casting would be the physical media and the 3D printing would be the digital. We'll follow suit. You know, in video games, it's moving to digital, whether we want to or not, right? That's the way it's going.
I'd be really surprised if the next generation of console games had to put a disc in at all.
And I like having my own video games. Like, perfect example, I'm trying to buy Space Marine 2, which is the new game that came out, and I can't find it in any stores.
So moving on to Tom Freeman, 3D printing is a hobby in its own right, but quite honestly, it doesn't interest me. I want to buy models and kitbash them and be creative. Doesn't mean sometimes I won't buy 3D printed, but probably my favorite Mantic units have been very detailed resin kits. And then two, I'd never eliminate proxies entirely. It's because otherwise everyone's armies would look way less diverse. And then he gives a couple of examples of like working in some other models into some of his armies, like some aliens into his GCPS, some halflings, using some Wargame Atlantics as well as Mantic. I think it's possible for Cow to be mostly Mantic without preventing people being creative. Yeah, that's a great point. JPFJ, the four-letter man, John Paul Fuller Jackson. Number one, the Mantic Vault has revolutionized the distribution and availability of their resin models, when before they would actively seek out cheaper or plastic alternatives. I mean, this is the first time someone's spoken about the price of the vault in this discussion again, which is bloody cheap. In addition, the prevalence of resin 3D printers is much higher in countries with a safe space to use them. Countries where living in apartments, this is the norm, but it's just not possible. So yeah, I alluded to that earlier. Finally, the part of the business I know least about, I doubt the current financial model for the vault is sustainable as a subscription service. They're required to put out sculpts of the vault every month. Proxies are actually something I enjoy in Kings of War, thanks to the flexibility of the game. If someone has an exciting theme, then go for it. Golden rule, though, it has to be clearly representing the unit. I'm not as quite as sure on the subscription model, because like any subscription model, there's a whole bunch of people paying, don't use it at all. or rarely use it.
Me.
Exactly. So they're getting money for jam in some things. So even though it's cheap, those people are funding some of the production. And at the moment, they're giving away a lot some months, but other times it's only things like upgrade parts, things like that they were producing already. So I do think it becomes more difficult. But it's not that different to the My Mini Factory or Patreons. Most companies, you're paying $11 a month or something for a similar amount. So it obviously has some sustainability. Otherwise, all these companies wouldn't be doing it.
What's going to be interesting is long term, because at this point, they still have a catalog of 3D models that they can use, right? I know they're actively still making new models, but they have an existing catalog that they can leverage right now. At some point, the well is dry. And then what do they do when they don't have a back catalog, right? That's the question. What happens when they don't have a back catalog of 3D models available?
We've talked about what could they trial as a, you know, fully 3D printable army, right, first, and people have thrown up Herd or Green Lady or all these other things. The other option is pick something that you've got a massive resin for already that you've been putting up and fill out the rest with the STLs. So something like Salamanders.
Give me Lancers and Commodons and Gekatoa.
You know, that army's already 3/4 resin. So let's finish it, baby. And then stick the whole thing on My Mini Factory.
All right, next up, we've got the Lighthouse Steward himself, Nathan Arnold. His answer number one, yes, but be more direct with allowing online 3D print sellers to produce models. I think what he's getting at is when they started, they required a brick and mortar. But I think that's changing. Honestly, I'm not sure, but I think that's changing. And his answer to number two about proxies, it needs to look like the unit that it's supposed to be in some capacity. Having Gribbly monsters as butchers and Night Stalkers makes sense. Using them as Huskarls in Northern Alliance, not so much. If the opponent needs a super long explanation of what it is and why, it's too convoluted. Next up, we've got Lee Simpson, who says, I currently have no access to 3D printing and probably won't. I know I can access third-party sites, but I'd rather give my money to Mantic. 100% agree. Makes perfect sense. It's about accessibility there. As to proxies, never been bothered as long as they're not stupid. You know, and that's the age-old question. What's stupid? You know, it's that line Jeremy said before. I know it when I see it.
It's like in the eye of the beholder.
I make the distinction between proxies and count as. The elf with a bow, I understand what that is. Whether a GW model or whether it's a Mantic model, I know what that is. It's an elf with a bow.
Yeah, next on the list, Sean Vilmont. He likes the availability of both. He's paid through the nose for Hellstrikers and Thundersteers, then got one Hellstriker printed, and it was super easy to put together and a lot cheaper. I know Matt and I, we've talked about the Aeronauts before, right? The 3D printed. They're just easier to work with sometimes, a 3D printed. So that's an opportunity cost, really, that we haven't talked about, right? If I'm saving time assembling something that's a resin cast and it's easier to put together and paint as a printer, as a hobbyist, that to me, I love that idea, saving time. And then he says, in regards to proxies, I don't mind too terribly much as long as you're okay telling me every single term, what they are, and what's your threat range. I prefer the proxies to be different, though. I have a pet peeve when the entire army looks like the same thing, and I can't keep track of which one has what magic item.
Next up, we have Taylor. I'm a very open person. As long as it's a proxy for a model and it's good looking, has the right vibe and all, I'm cool. But buying a bunch of pre-made horses, like little rubber ones, and smacking them on the base, or action figures, no go. Regarding the vault, yes, 100% switch metal and resin to printing. Interesting that he brought metal in. They should print their own and also let us print them all. I know not everyone can get a printer, but having the convenience and a fee for it is a great solution in my eyes.
Next up, we have Max K. They should do whatever is best for their product sales while balancing customer satisfaction. As a customer, more options is better, but that might not be the most profitable business model. Good points, Max. Two, proxies are great with some caveats. Put in the effort, painting, basing, converting to really sell the theme and make sure the models are representative of what is being used. Don't just grab a greater demon from your old Warhammer army and tell people it's a greater elemental without some effort of theme to back it up. Also good points. Luke Schaefer. One, it's cheap and reasonable enough for them to have a 3D printer farm or license it out. I've stopped making armies from alternate miniatures or prints now thanks to the vault. Mantic is making more money from me than they ever did before the vault. So that's a good point going back to the viability of the subscription model. And it's the same when the companion came out, you know. Automatically now they have, you know, whatever it is, $10 to $15 a month in Australian from me, or 20 or whatever it is per month. Two, for Luke, I really dislike when it's not instantly recognizable and distinct. I lose clock time and have in the past made poor decisions that have cost games because I got confused, for example, between which was the greater air elemental and which was the greater fire. Garage or club games or whatever goes.
Next up, we've got Matthew. By the way, I met Matthew for the first time in person at Best of the Rest. The dude is Jack, bro. I do not want to meet him in an alley. So his first answer is not exactly an answer, but I love not having to pay for their resins and just print it myself. Again, it's about options and it's about accessibility. And his answer to the second question, I played in Best of the Rest last weekend and all of my opponents ran non-Mantic armies. Half the fun of playing this game is playing and seeing awesome models. I truly hope Mantic doesn't go the way of other companies and ban things. I think the way they handle it now with incentives to play all Mantic or 90% is perfect. This is the important thing I got to remind everybody. Every game is figure agnostic.
Mantic doesn't make any decisions. The only reason anyone thinks a company does is because of GW with their stores. If you're playing in their location, they say no. But otherwise, every game has been miniature agnostic forever.
Next, we have Jim Smith. I don't think replacing all resin with the vault is the right move. Many don't have a 3D printer, and the cost is high to have someone print an entire army. There's still the joy of opening a box off the shelf, getting the new bit smell. I would love for Mantic to release STL files of the models they don't have kits for, so I don't have to search for the mini that's close enough to my army. Happily pay for the file and printing by another in that scenario. This is something I've said in the past where, like, if you're not going to make a Commodon, design the Commodon like you were going to make it and just give me the file and I'll have someone print it. But I want the same sculptor that did the Rhino Cav to do the Commodon. And then number two, he says proxy should allow rule of cool, but adhere to what you see is what you get.
The only thing I'd say about the resin printing is there's still a new model smell there. It'll just kill you instead of the plastic. So Adrian Scott, regarding proxies in casual games, I'm happy with whatever. If I'm paying to go to an event though, my preference is for proxy armies to at least meet three basic criteria. You can easily tell which unit is which. Some effort has gone into building it, and it feels like it matches the Panathor setting. You know, so, and he says basically he doesn't want to feel like he's facing a 40K Space Marine army. And then he says, keeping in mind that I live in Kalgoorlie and have to drive 7 hours or worse, fly across two time zones to get to an event. And then we've got Chase Thompson. He says, I think they need, in capital letters, to continue to supply their own miniatures and not rely on 3D printing for their resin stuff. And then two, I think proxies are fine as long as you can look at the unit and reasonably determine what it is. Crazy themed armies can be fun and goofy, but for me personally, it takes me out of the world.
So next, our friend from Texas, Nick McElonis. I don't believe that our wargaming space has moved far enough to go all 3D printing. There is a vast majority of a population that doesn't have access to a printer or just doesn't want to deal with one. While with our current tech, the resin model details are very nice, resin models are still inferior to hard plastic. But this doesn't address the real part. Mantic is a company for profit. Anything that doesn't further this goal in at least a secondary effort harms the company. Anyone who doesn't have access to the accounting numbers can't make a decision. We would need to run the numbers and see what the man hours needed, etc., company reputation, infrastructure, vault subs, for it to be worth it. And he just makes a fantastic point, right? This is all just from our sort of wish casting outside. None of us have their accounting book to know what makes sense for them as a company. So great point. You know, they companies still exist for one, you know, for a reason to make profit. So good point by Nick. Next, after that, we have Carl Reese. He says, no, for several reasons. A, there are people, myself included, admittedly, who just want to buy that kit and not all the other bits and bobs. Not everyone has access to a 3D printer. So again, I think one of the things we're seeing here, Rob, around the 3D printing discussion is accessibility for 3D printed stuff for those that don't have a 3D printer. That seems to be a trend here, right? Is a request for accessibility. And then when he talks about proxies, Carl says, should be encouraged as long as, again, I know it when I see it, but he says the look and feel are right. Machine guns are not bows, he says. More power to you, buddy. And the proxies are easily identifiable for what they're meant to be. A stand of 10mm tanks are not dragons. And again, that to me is the you know it when you see it, right? You know 10mm tanks, obviously. You bring your bolt action army on MDF bases. I'm not going to buy it as Sylvankin. But some great points by Carl.
Yeah, next we have Chet. It was nice meeting you at the event, Chet. For number one, I think the resin minis is strictly a question of what is profitable for them and what is not. It goes back to what Nick said earlier. And then question number two, proxies are one of the best elements of Kings of War. I love this game and try to support it, but I don't always have endless income. I personally love the challenge of making models out of anything. I recently brought my Dixie Cup Mincers and Dixie Cup Winget to Masters and got a lot of compliments on them. I did have some Mantic Goblins, but I like mixing ranges again. Chet, if you haven't listened to our back catalog, go do a search for any of the episodes with Joe McLaren. He is a kindred spirit with you. Next up, we've got Paul Collins. Mantic should choose whichever is better for their product sales and development. Presumably selling physical models from key ranges like Phantoms are part of their core income. Would they really want to lose this? Might be viable to replace physical resin with selling STLs on an individual basis, but only once there is a much higher uptake 3D printing. Number two is proxy models. As a bare minimum, it should be clear what a proxy is. Proxy bases are great. Unpainted rocks is proxy. Scenic bases, materials, it should probably best be avoided.
Oh, unpainted rocks suck. We all know who loves unpainted rocks, and it ain't me.
If you're thinking of getting into dwarves, go outside, pick up a couple of rocks. You've got some little obsidian golems right there.
Brilliant. I freaking love it.
Dry brush that.
Don't even have to... Dry brush what...
We're getting too hobby right now. We should probably wrap this up before
they're already painted like rocks. They were made that way outside.
Next, we've got Garrett Kunkel. The vault is fantastic, but there's always going to be a subset of people who'd rather purchase a molded resin model rather than a printed one. Yep, that'll probably become less likely as printing gets better and better and better and better. Two, I feel proxies require a common sense social contract at most tables. The proxy should be an approximation for what it represents and be readily distinguished from other units in the army. The sticks and stones or children's toy proxy armies always seem to come up in these discussions. The army list is aligned to the models. I don't see a problem with it in a casual local setting. So, you know, reflecting a similar theme. So next up, we've got Mike Painter from the Controlled Fire podcast. I think Mantic should have a line of models that can be purchased, but also I would like licensed producers to be able to print the models, freight costs being what they are these days. Two, I recognize and admire the artistry and imagination that's gone into some armies. However, when the models look nothing like the army, I do feel that Kings of War has lost its soul by allowing this practice. And again, I think that points back to Rob. This is in the hands of the community and the TOs. Mantic don't have a role in this. That is totally a community-based influence.
Next up, we have Michael Horner. I think you'd be hard-pressed to have stores support the game if it goes straight to the vault. I know one store that would just remove their stuff. I wish they would have their basic line for each army specifically not on the vault, but then do all the upgrades, etc. on the vault or special order from them. But our store has the ability to print, so I'm biased. Losing the basic line on the shelf, I think, kills the growth of the game, and eventually players will fall off unless you have somewhere to play and recruit new players. This is an important stakeholder in this discussion. We've been talking about the community in the sense of what Mantic needs to do and what Mantic and the players. I can only speak for myself. I play at tournaments and I play at his store.
And I don't think Mantic has any intention of walking away from plastic as the base of most armies. And we've seen that intention recently with the new Abyss, you know, Trident Realms, things like that. They want to be doing plastic, so you've got that core available to you in a box, for sure.
It seems like some companies, what to me feels like commiserate size with Mantic, do more hard plastics than Mantic does hard plastics. I just wonder, just in general, I mean, this is kind of like a side note or whatever, why Mantic does so much stuff in resin anyway? Why don't they do more hard plastic?
I think it's volume and cost, because once they're doing plastic, they have to do a certain amount of volume, make it worth the investment in the first place. Whereas resin, they can do their cast by cast. When the cast runs out, they replace it. You know, whereas the plastic, they have to do a significant amount at once, and then they've got to sell that product.
If you compare this to Conquest, Conquest has less armies. I think those armies have more plastic, but they're maybe doing the right amount of volume because there's less choice.
No, you bring up a fantastic point. As I look on my table of Conquest models that I'm working on, the majority of all their stuff is all hard plastic, but they only have six factions, or I think six or seven at this point. So when you think about the number of hard plastic kits, they're probably the same or less than what Mantic has. But because it's a smaller amount of armies, it feels like in playing that game, everything is in hard plastic, when really it's not. It just, they're not trying to have full ranges for 20 armies. You know what I mean? So great observation, Rob.
Well, I also think there's the thing for Mantic is that they're trying to produce a certain amount that might not just be used in Kings, but in alternative game systems. Whereas because Conquest is that different scale and they're much more their own universe rather than like doubling down on some tropes and things, they probably look towards producing a much smaller volume because they either go, people are really only going to buy a $200 army box set to play our game.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that that's Mantic's DNA from the beginning. They were the alternative Warhammer sculpts.
Next up, we've got Jason Murray. So no to one is not everyone has an access to a 3D printer, but he feels like most, if not all, resins should be on the vault. And he's happy for proxies as long as it's clear what they represent and are suitable models.
Next, we have Janice Souther. We are guilty of printing a fair bit of stuff and regularly have friends buying STLs and resin for things they want to proxy. Would love more on the vault, but we also enjoy supporting our local game store and friends with shops at events. So many people don't have access to printers and don't want to spend a fortune setting them up. Totally fair point. Mantic continue to produce miniatures, make sure people still have access to the hobby, and would hate for that to stop. If Mantic did stop production, all the local game stores would need a catalog and a reliable quality printer, which is not the same feeling as holding a box in your hand straight away from the shop. And that's true. There's something so nice about being able to get in the store, drive to your local game store, feel something in your hands, and walk home with that. And maybe that's the boomer curmudgeon in me, but I just love going to a store and buying something. But great points there. As for proxies, it needs to fit what it's being used for. I hate trying to figure out what I'm facing and getting a unit mistaken for something else.
And then we have Idiot Proof Dalek. Until every friendly local game store has ability to print to order for those people unable to afford or manage a resin printer, this would be a bad move. Also, because resin minis have to come in and out of molds, they're designed to be far more robust than 3D designs. 3D minis break ridiculously often. Well, a point I would say is that some people with the resin printing is like, yes, resin can be brittle, but it is highly dependent on the resin that is used as well. So, you know, you can get tougher resins that are much better. I like proxies to roughly resemble what they're supposed to be. They don't have to have the exact weapons specified, but I draw the line when people use one large model to represent a horde of something.
All right, next up, we've got Tony Mullins. Nice to meet you, Tony, at this past US Masters event in Washington. Answer to number one, been a supporter of Vault since day one. I was hoping it would become more robust as it went along, but I'm more than a little disappointed at this point. I don't think it matters very much if they continue to crank out their own resin since they can't really get any appreciable shelf space in the big stores that I've visited. I'm frankly shocked when I actually see Kings of War product in the game stores at all. Since we're a niche hobby within a niche hobby, I wish they'd fully embrace the reality of current 3D printing scene. I guess they're just happy to let OPR do that. It's a shame, really, since the strength of the company is their ability to create solid, enjoyable rules. I would vote Vault here because I think you'd be more likely to grow the currently somewhat stagnant numbers of players. And answer to number two, as many have stated above, casual games, hell, we occasionally cut out rectangle footprints to just try stuff out. In events, though, there should be a generally agreed upon statement of permissible proxies crafted by the RC. Yeah, so in terms of number one, I'd be really curious to hear from the community, you know, what they think about the value proposition that the Vault's offering. Because in my mind, was it $5 a month? I mean, it's giving me exactly what I want, which is to supplement plastic and the resins, you know, that I have purchased. So I think it's fantastic value. I don't think it's realistic for them to go the OPR route. A good portion of their business comes from gaming stores.
Okay, next on the list, we have Ian Kane. And he says, let me attach a picture of a Mantic model I opened today. And in that, in his post, there's a picture of what you would expect from a resin cast. Lots of bits and flash and pieces and just a mess. If they 3D printed it, then I'd probably have less than half the pieces to deal with. That means it's less likely they forget to pack one. I can get it on the table more quickly. It comes back again to that. He says it's got to be recognizable. If it's got spears, they have spears. He says he's not super keen on the more out there, you know, the My Little Pony extravagant proxies. And if I was a competitive Kings of War player, it would spoil my enjoyment facing such an army. I'd also like to vent a little on the ghosts or green paint jobs that really do my head. And so that's a classic, right? I'm going to paint a dwarf army, but they're ghosts. And you just prime everything into Neelix oxide, you know, and you got an army in a week. Yeah, I think that was kind of cool at first, but we all know why you're doing a ghost army now. I think the cat's out of the bag.
Justin Wickman, I don't think stopping resin production would be a good move. Plenty of folks don't have a 3D printer to use, and 3D printing is another hobby altogether. Could Mantic print it themselves? Sure, more machine does this, but I think at a high cost of the quality of the print. I haven't seen those models, so I'm not sure what they're using, but it'll also only get better. There are plenty of models that haven't been released in the vault that I look forward to seeing in the future and being able to have a friend print for me. And he used to be completely anti-proxy, but have shifted to more neutral. For models that aren't made for the game, it makes 100% sense. For models that are made, I'd prefer not using proxies in general, but kit bashing or entirely different models for characters or heroes is really neat and adds flavor, as long as the proxy is pretty similar to what it's supposed to represent.
So next we have Wes Peak. He says, number one, yes, As there is such a lack of availability for Kings of War lines at the local gaming store, the rule sets are great. Since they aren't growing the game, just allow the files to be bought and made via the vault. Number two, I think that proxy is all right, and people should be able to find creative armies within this amazing rule set. The proxy just needs to be close to what you say it is representing. Next, we have Bill Richardson. Great to meet you, Bill. Number one, 100% go in on the vault for access to resin models. If anything, it will provide them with motivation to replace them with newer hard plastics. And for number two, I think in tournaments, there should be a tougher standard for proxy. Stuff like taking all models for Army X and then playing them as Army Y. It's that count as we talked about, Jeremy and Matt, should not be happening. I should be able to walk up to the table and say, yeah, it's Empire Dust versus Twilightkin and not be wrong. At home or casual, who cares? Do whatever.
Yeah, and that's something to be said. You know, I remember in competitive games when there was no models at all for Night Stalkers, playing against them competitively, I found was pretty difficult. Constantly be remembered for of what everything was at all the times. You could say something as far as for competitive play that that's like an unseen advantage, right? If you're using stuff that is all weird to tweak your opponent out mentally. Alex Mueller says in regard to proxies, he has two requests. Unit looks like it's supposed to. And that it has the correct base size. We've all been there. Exceptional base size, right? Of I want to have my dragon on a picture frame. That sometimes that can be tough to play against. So two good points there. Larry Sturgeon, he says, as far as proxies, all is fair. I don't mind the toys people use or non-fantasy figs. It doesn't happen that often. And if you try to send us just set a standard of some kinds, it turns TOs into having to police instead of running an event, which, I mean, that is something to be said, right? Interesting points there.
Next up, we have Dave Fanning. He says, I'm all for dumping resin as it's becoming more expensive. And for number two, he says, fun and unique ways to play an army that's thematic and everything is clearly identifiable. Then I'm happy with proxies. I see it as a positive for the game that allows us to showcase some of the best creative painters around. What detracts from my immersion is when I see the same minis just become the new hotness to field competitive armies. So 10 flying units just bouncing between Scorchwings or Alohi or Forsaken, for example, it's even more evident when the basing is off and you can clearly tell that the army was assembled from just what they had around. I love what he's saying here, and I think it's an important distinction in the sense that we've talked about the social contract, right? But it's also important to realize we're not playing video games. There is a barrier to some of the broken... And that is, you got to pay 8 hordes of Scorchwings.
Lots of great ideas and thoughts in this month's topics. You know, this is a topic, as you can see, that people approach from lots of different perspectives, life experience, budget, all sorts of different avenues and thoughts and lenses around proxying and around counts as and all this stuff. But one thing I really loved, Rob, our Facebook page has really become a home and a community, and it's a community in which people can share different ideas, different thoughts, and all thoughts and ideas are welcome, even when we disagree. There's lots of stuff sometimes as a show that we disagree on, right? Mm-hmm. Behind the scenes, model design or game balance. One of us may feel an army is too good or vice versa or whatever. But we're really trying to create a space in the CounterCharge community and CounterCharge family that people can come, share their ideas, and it's okay to have different ideas and everyone's welcome. So I felt as an audience, I just really got deep into this topic, but in a way where even when there was disagreement, people were not talked down to, ideas were shared. Very much in the spirit, I think, of us asking these questions, Rob, the responses that we got.
You can't come together if we don't listen to each other. All right, next up, let's just touch a little bit on what we got going on with the podcast. Obviously, there's a bunch of Clash of Kings content coming. If you have a suggestion for a topic that you want us to dive into in classic CounterCharge fashion, please let us know on the Facebook page. In terms of hobby episodes, we've got a Paint and Rage episode, which should be out by the time you're listening to this. We're working on a basing episode. We've got a fantastic painter lined up to talk about a few things, but one of the things that I'm interested in pulling apart is, you know, how do models and rules affect your hobby? So Mark is a very high-level painter, was an AOS player. He's kind of moved over to Kings of War, and we're really going to look into that. Maybe some of the differences between AOS and Kings of War from both the models that are available and the rules, how do those impact his hobby? Really looking forward to that. And just in general, if you have a hobby topic, you know, Jordan is chomping at the bit to get us going into some hobby. And so if there's anything that we can talk about that can unlock something for you, please let us know. Next up, we've got the Lore Master Library. You know, we've already recorded our episode on the Broken Alliance. Look for the poll on what the next book is going to be. In terms of army reviews, they're still coming, but one of the changes that we're trying to make is we're trying to incorporate Clash of Kings changes. So I know for the orcs, who we've got K2, we've got Sean Villamont, Kyle Poole, and Brenton Williams, but I'm trying to get Clash of Kings changes in there. Jeremy, I hate doing a 3-hour army review only to have it obsolete.
Be out of date in like a week, because those army reviews take a lot of work.
And Ogres is coming as well. We don't have a topic for next month, but again, if you have a suggestion, please let us know. And Jeremy, final thoughts?
Yeah, you know, can't wait for the new Clash book to come out. Like, as we said, we're going to be getting the Scrying Gems together to do a full deep dive episode into the new Clash book, both army updates, and also we want to take a deep dive look at the command orders, which ones work. Talk a little bit about, you know, who should you be upgrading with what dice. So we're going to be taking a look at that. And we're going to take some time during that to talk about command dice within the competitive tournament scene. So stay tuned for that. I think that's always love doing our Scrying Gems episodes. And it's cool, man. I think the book is great. I'm always such a big fan of Clash of Kings. You know, it always comes out with so much cool new stuff. I'm really curious to see new Abyssals, what comes from that. You know, I was talking to Jesse Garrett today, longtime Abyssal player, and he's like so excited. He's thinking of making his third Abyssal army and this time using all Mantic models. So again, you know, do cool models that backed up by fun, cool new rules, and you're going to get people excited. So keep it up.
So again, we really thank you guys for hanging in there and listening to us. Thanks for sharing your comments. We really appreciate it. You guys are the lifeblood of the community, and let's keep it rolling into November. So that's going to do us tonight. And until next time, keep countercharging.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Countercharge. Please let us know what you thought of the show by emailing us at counterchargepodcast@gmail.com, on Twitter at countercharge15, or by commenting on the Countercharge Kings of War podcast Facebook group. If you enjoy the show, you can help others find out about it by leaving positive reviews on iTunes. Until next time, keep countercharging. Music is a composition of Kevin MacLeod and is licensed under Creative Commons.